Thank you very much for your patience while we had
Yeah. If you just raise your voice because I can't hear you really well, but.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I could.
Okay. My guest, as I mentioned earlier today, is Rahim Alhaj, musician, oud player, and composer from Iraq. He's going to be playing tomorrow in San Francisco at the Herbst Theater as part of the San Francisco Jazz Festival. Welcome, Rahim, to Mezzos and Tapas on KKUP.
Thank you very much. Glad to be with you.
I know that you moved to the U.S. Recently, like in 2000?
Yes.
Before that, were you living in Iraq, or did you leave Iraq earlier than that?
I left Iraq in 1991. And then I went to Jordan, and after Jordan I went to Syria. I stayed in Syria for the rest of the time till, well, traveling with time between Europe and Syria till 2000, and I came to the United States.
Can I ask you to speak a little louder as well?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
I will.
Great. Can you tell us the circumstances around your leaving Iraq and coming to the U.S.?
Well, I was actually politically active against Saddam regime during that time, and I was forbidden to leave Iraq, actually. And so my mom managed to find a way to take me out of Iraq that time. And she bought me a false travel document.
She bought you what, sorry?
A false travel document.
Oh, travel. Okay. Okay.
And in that case, I was able to leave Iraq to Jordan. And after that, like I said, I sort of went to Syria and until I came. So it was necessary for me to leave Iraq because I was in danger. And I was, like I said, politically active against Saddam regime, and I was.
Were you working as a musician then, or what?
Yeah, I was a musician, and I composed lots of music against the regime and criticizing the Iran-Iraq war during that time.
Mm.
And it was an unjustified war, and I composed lots of music actually to criticize the circumstances around that time, and that's what put me in trouble with the government.
I see.
And that's basically my life was not in safe.
Of course, yeah.
And that's why I decided, and not just me actually, I mean, I had to leave Iraq during that time. So we managed to get this travel document and get out of Iraq.
And you lived in Syria for a while?
I lived actually almost 9 years in Syria.
And you were working there as a musician also? Or?
Yes. That's my job since I was actually 15.
Wow.
I was a musician.
Yeah.
I was a musician, known musician in Iraq and composer. And so I left Iraq. I was in Syria. I was a professional musician, and I was able to travel also to Europe and doing my regular concerts in Europe in our country during that time. So I was a musician, yes.
Because I'm wondering if you know, your popularity or your, the fact that you're proficient in your profession, did that buy you any, if it helped you at all, or was it something against you?
It's kind of really long journey. Coming to the United States in, you know, Iraqi musician playing oud. And oud is not a familiar instrument in the United States.
Yeah.
In Europe, there's a lot of people, they know the oud. But in the United States, this was really, they do not know what the oud is. And so it was not easy a process to get your name out. And that's my frustration, because I thought when I came to the United States and everybody knows who is Rahim Alhaj. You know, I thought,
yeah,
people, they stop me on the street.
Well, now they will. Now that you're,
you know, that's what my perception during that time, right?
Yeah.
So when I came to the United States as a political asylum to the United States, and with oud, I mean, and with no English, at the same time. Luckily, I was a musician, not novelist or a poet. In that case, my art will be really difficult to communicate with.
Yeah.
So it was really easy just to write my music and give it, and people, they can play it. Now, I think the process of making your name or playing your music here and educate, and I find this really important that the musician, they, from Middle East specifically, they have to stay here to be part of their, as like their ambassador to their culture.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because there's a huge misconception about Middle East, specifically about their culture and their music.
Absolutely, and specifically Iraq, with all the the turmoil happening there now. All we hear about Iraq in the news is not very positive.
Right.
Having somebody like you, like yourself, show the cultural and beautiful music of Iraq specifically is definitely a very precious gift to all of us. So thank you for doing that.
You're welcome. And that's when I came, like I said, to United States, and this is was popular story right now in the United States about Rahim al-Hajj, how he ended up to Albuquerque, and how I my social worker, he find me a job in McDonald's, and I thought McDonald's is an institute of music. I have no idea
you haven't heard
what
of
the
McDonald's
is.
Lucky.
So when he asked me, well, we find you a job, and I said, well, okay, so which kind of job? And he said, well, in McDonald's. And I said, so which kind of music do they teach there in this institute? Do they teach Western classical music or Eastern classical music? And he said, no, it's McDonald's. And I do not know what a McDonald's is. Until he said, well, no,
it's a
restaurant. And I said, well, I'm not playing in a restaurant. And he said, well, you are not playing there. You are working there as a dishwasher.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, imagine that.
So did you actually...
So I was just really angry, and I told him, well, do you know who I am, really? And he said, well, yeah, I know, I read your resume. You are one of the best wood players in the world, but here's the deal, and you have to find a job, and you have to keep your life. I said, well, I need to go back. I mean, to be in McDonald's, and it's just like, it's unbelievable.
Wow. And so what happened? Did you actually work at McDonald's?
No, I did not, actually. And then I have a dear friend of mine, and she's still a friend of mine. And in fact, he managed me for 1 year, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And she did manage to do a concert for me.
Yeah.
And here in Albuquerque at UNM. It's a beautiful auditorium.
University of New Mexico.
Level. It was a long process. And because I came from different culture, right?
Mm-hmm.
Our culture is you go there, you play your music, all the audiences, they came to see the concert free.
Mm.
I mean, they don't pay money to see music, I mean, to hear music.
Yeah.
So here you have to rent a hall, you have to to hire a guy for sound check. And you have to hang your flyer. And I said, well, I'm not hanging my flyer on the street. So my friend said, well, you know what? Just stay and practice and do the program. And so I did the concert. I was just really emotionally down.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And I played just like as if I didn't play before. I mean, just like I'm dying to play. I'm dying to perform.
Yeah.
Because I spent all my life performing every, if it's not every week, every other day in my whole life.
How did you end up in New Mexico? Do you have any relatives there, or was it like the luck of the draw?
Actually, this is not my choice. Was UN chose New Mexico for me as a home.
So when you applied for political, you applied in Syria, or did you, how did you apply?
No, I was in Syria as a political asylum.
Oh, I see. And then
and they brought me here... to replace, to find me a home.
Mm,
and they said Albuquerque, I mean, New Mexico, Santa Fe and Albuquerque, they are really great for two things.
So you don't know anybody there, you have no relatives whatsoever, you just kind of like got
I have no idea what is actually Albuquerque. And in fact, I said, what's this Albuquerque, in Arabic name, you know? And so United Nation was thinking, choose New Mexico for me for two reasons. Well, the first reason, they told me that I'm interested in art. I'm an art critic, and that's my habit. My hobby and always writing articles, newspaper, magazines, about art. And they told me Santa Fe and Albuquerque.
Nice.
And beside, the music scene is really great here in New Mexico. And the second reason was, it's like a desert, like the Middle East.
So they, like you're from Iraq,
they,
which is
they
very
don't know
island,
that
very
Iraq
green.
Is so green, it's not like New Mexico. so that's these two reasons. And then after that, I did a concert, and there's a guy came with his son. He's like 7 years old, and he came to me holding my brochure, my picture on the program. And he was crying. This little boy, and I told him, "You don't like my music." And he said, "No, I loved your music, but I need your signature." And I said, "Wow, if this little boy understood what I'm talking about, I have to stay here to make a difference."
Good for you.
Because I find this lack of ignorance about Middle East, and it's a huge, it's just inconceivable.
Yeah, lack of knowledge, you mean.
Right, and beside that, I'm playing an instrument, oud. It's for them, it's folk instrument. It's not a classical instrument, right?
Yeah.
And excuse me, so I find myself in a position that I have to be educator and ambassador to my country.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then I started to compose music for orchestra. For oud and full symphony orchestra.
You mean
quartet.
A Western orchestra, not a Middle Eastern orchestra.
Sorry?
A Western orchestra?
It's my own composition. I composed for New Mexico Symphony Orchestra.
Okay.
For Albuquerque Philharmonic Orchestra.
Oh,
we played like 16 major symphony orchestras around the United States.
That's awesome. So was it the first time you composed to a Western orchestra?
Yeah. I'm a solo performer. Right?
Yeah.
Always my composition is around my own experience.
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with symphony. But
so
I find this necessity to compose and to tell the others or the Western classical music that, yes, this music, we study it, we know it very well. But my music, you do not know it. I have to teach you how to play it.
I see.
I can play Bach and Mozart. It's not a big deal. But for my music, I have to teach you to play it. It's not enough to write it down for you.
Yeah.
So I started actually my first project, and it was for oud and string quartet.
Okay.
And it comes as a CD, actually. It's nominated to Grammy for twice, actually. It's a beautiful city.
What's it called?
It's called Friendship Sadaka. And the Friendship came, I think, in 2004, I remember, I'm not sure. So, and then I moved it to, like I said, to full symphony orchestra. And then I said, well, okay, jazz, I can play jazz. Flamenco, I can play flamenco. And I did it. CD with Atmar Liebert, and I composed music for that, and even Native American, actually. And I finished a CD with which will come actually next month, with a great sarodi player, Amjad Ali Khan, and he's a fantastic Indian. He's the only one actually alive, the greatest one alive in the world. And we did CD, this is called Ancient Sound, and I did with Bill Frisell for jazz.
Mm-hmm.
And I moved it on and on, just to, in fact, even I played and composed and recorded with REM.
Oh, really?
The rock and roll, you know, guys.
Wow.
It just to prove there's one thing in this world, it's called this music.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do which kind of part of this planet you live in or you came from.
Yeah.
They have their own music, but it's still it's music.
Absolutely. It's a universal language.
And there's two kinds of music. There's good music and bad music. And there is nothing called this classical music, and this is jazz, and this is blues, and we made it up. We made this kind of categorize this music, but it's the music. And there is something called world of music. What do you mean world of music? As if we are coming from different worlds.
That's a good point. Yeah, actually, we.
What do you mean world of music?
That means
so
every music.
So it is not classically. I mean, I can play classical music. So what the deal?
Yeah.
It's not a big deal. So, and I find that, like I said, it's just really important to stay and educate a lot of people about culture and about the music. It just goes 5,000 years, right?
Absolutely,
it's 5,000 years, this music. It's sacred music. It's not just for entertaining.
Yeah.
And I'm a solo performer. Because I believe that if you are a good musician, you have to be a solo a player.
Yeah.
Not ensemble. Because ensemble, you can, you know, manage whatever the sound is.
Yeah.
But when you are a solo performer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be very persuasive. You have to be good to let people listen to you.
You came to the US in 2000, is that correct?
Yes.
In the year 2000. So in 8 years, you've actually accomplished quite a bit, because I know you have multiple awards. Can you tell us about some of the awards that you won?
Right. The first award actually I received, when I was in Iraq, I received the best composition when I was 13.
Already? Wow.
And the first composition, which is all about all Iraq, whole Iraq, you know, I won the first prize for young composers.
Yeah.
And I was 13 during that time. And I get two awards from my institute as for outstanding musician.
Yeah.
And in the United States, the second year when I stayed in the United States, here in Albuquerque specifically, I get the Bravo's Award for Excellence in Music of New Mexico.
Bravo's Award?
What they call Bravo's Award.
Bravo's, okay.
For Excellence in Music. And this was in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get Grammy nomination in 2006, and I get 2008 for my CD, When the Soul Settled, the Music of Iraq, which is with the Smithsonian Folkways.
Yeah, actually, that's the CD that we played the track from earlier today. And so.
Right. And this CD, for this 2008, mm-hmm. it was for the best traditional world music album.
And do you sing also, or you just play the oud?
Sorry?
Do you also sing?
No, I do not sing. I'm just compose music. And after that, like I said, I find this is important to say. Who will, when you put the name of Iraq in the academy, right?
Yeah.
This is huge. Because they do not know what the Iraq looks like. What kind of music do they have?
That's true, yeah.
And when Smithsonian asked me to do the CD, and I thought, really, to be honest, I'm not interested to play classical and traditional Iraqi music, because I need to present my own music.
I see.
Which is, it talks about the current time.
Yeah.
It talks about children and women, and that's my focus in my music, always about women and children.
When you say your music is about women and children, does that mean you express their feelings, or what do you mean by your music is about women and children?
I collect their stories. I believe, not believe, but that children and women in back east, they do not have voice.
Uh-huh.
So I need to be their voice. So I collect their stories and make it music of it.
Thank
and
you.
Always when I perform, I talk to the audience and explain why I composed this
I see.
What it talks about, to give them some kind of background.
Yeah.
And the preparation for them to hear, because I'm not using the lyrics. If I'm using the lyrics, probably they understand what I'm talking.
Yeah.
But now I'm making this pure music. It's abstract.
Yeah, so they can just feel it.
Yeah. So the tool I use is just to explain why I composed it. Then I play the song, I play the composition, and they understand what I'm talking about.
So you're giving a voice to the voiceless, in a sense.
Exactly.
Wow. Well, that's definitely a true artist who can do that. Can you tell us about your beginnings? You said you got an award when you were 13. So when did you actually start playing music? And how
did
you
when play? I was actually 8 and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in elementary school.
Do you have anybody in your family who's a musician? Or?
No.
So
I was just fascinated by music.
Mm-hmm.
Always sing, and there's a teacher who's an Arabic teacher, actually. He's not a musician, but
yeah.
He knows how to play oud.
And
I'm fascinated by this instrument, and one time I was gracious enough to ask him if I could just touch it.
Uh-huh.
And you know, back east, teacher's like a god. You can't touch him, you can't face him, you can't look into my eye, right?
Yeah.
So I was courageous enough to tell him if I could just touch it.
Uh-huh.
And he said, well, okay. So he held it to me.
Yeah.
And gave it to me. And so I touched it, and I'm just afraid and shaken, right? Because I'm afraid maybe he will punish me.
Yeah.
And I imitate him, to put my left hand to the neck, and it was just so teeny tiny with the gigantic Iraku.
Yes,
huge. So I managed to put my finger and I did something, which is impressive. I don't know exactly what I did that
uh-huh.
time, but he impressed very, very much. And it seems like I did something like, you know, make noise or, I mean,
you played some music?
Play something. I'm not exactly sure because, like I said, I was still afraid.
Yeah.
So he impressed a lot, and he said, wow, you are a musician. I said, well, no. And then next day, and he asked me if I need to play it again. I said, well, yeah, I would. So I did the same thing, and he gave it to me.
Wow. He
and
did
he said, food. You are a musician. Take it. And I can imagine, you know, this little boy and with this, you know, teacher like a god for me. And he
gave
me this beautiful, beautiful, gorgeous oud. And he started teaching me some maqams, some scales and modes and some songs. And I started, actually, the first concert I did was in elementary school
mm-hmm.
in the same year.
Good for you.
I played.
That is definitely a very exceptional story. Thank you for sharing that. So, but how did your family react? Did they support you? Did they encourage you?
Sorry?
Your family, how did they react?
Well, that's a nice story. It goes for all the musicians in back east, basically.
Uh-huh.
My father, he doesn't like me to be a musician.
I can imagine.
Not to go to profession, you know, be a teacher, be a doctor, be an engineer, anything, but not a musician.
Yeah.
And my mom was supported me so much. And I remember, because when I was in that time, how I was sleeping with my instrument. I cannot sleep without it. Every day, I talk to it, I touch it. I talk to it as a person. You know, good night, and I kiss it, and cover it with my blanket, and play every day, like 12 hours.
Wow,
well,
that's
practice. I'm still practicing 12 hours, actually.
I'm sure.
So until my father saw me, I'm just talking to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And cover it with my blanket. And he said, he's insane, this guy.
Uh-oh.
You need to do something. And then I remember, so vivid to me, and my father said, no, we have to do something, you know, we have to take him out from this guy. And my mom, and I remember fighting him, and she was telling him, she said, could you leave him alone? Because he will be the most important musician in the world. And I don't understand what he was talking about, really.
Good for her. That's true mother here. That's wonderful.
And she fought him. And in fact, I studied Arabic literature beside my training in Baghdad Conservatory.
So you can be a teacher like your father wanted you to be.
Right. I can't. He said, well, that's the only way you can study music, but you have to study things.
You have to do something real.
Yeah, exactly. Do something real.
Oh, believe me, I know. So it sounds like your mother was a huge influence in your life, or still is a huge influence in your life.
Absolutely. My mom is... my relationship with her is so strange, actually. I mean, a woman that, not just she's wise, she was my window to the world. She was my window, exactly my window. I can see, I can explore, I can ask, I can find answers. I can be mad, I can be happy, I can be frustrated. So it was my window.
Yeah.
In the beginning, and you know, I was this kid. I mean, this little kid, and I think, not I think I'm probably somebody who will disagree with me a lot. But I said, to be a musician or to be an artist, you have to be cursed.
What's
that? Means that you have to be obsessive.
Obsessive
enough.
Yeah.
To not, you cannot do anything except that.
Yeah.
Do you understand me? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I'm amazed when I came here and I find, you know, all musicians, great musicians, they have teachers and do that. This, I mean, how can you do that if you cannot practice like 6 to 8 hours a day as a performer, right?
Yeah.
So all the musicians, they do not have that time to practice. You know, how can they make a living?
It's a luxury. Yeah.
So how do you make a living?
Yeah.
Actually, I have a funny story. He was here in Albuquerque.
Uh-huh.
One day, me and my wife, we have and my manager, and we sit in the restaurant, and it was just like four, really, and people, they waiting, right?
Yeah.
To have a available
seat,
table, and they came in. And we had this thing. We said, well, why is this woman this way? Just we let her, you know, invite her to our table. And fine, you know, she can eat and we can eat and listen to the jazz and the jazz.
Yeah.
So we invite her and she was grateful. And we did, you know, start to ask her, what do you do and where you are here, where you came from, blah, blah, blah. So, and she said, so what do you do? I mean, actually, my manager saw her. Well, he's a musician, and she said, "So, how many hours do you practice a day?"
Yeah.
And I said, "Well, 6 to 8 hours." So she said, "So, what do you do?"
Like that doesn't count.
So, and I said, "Well, I'm practicing 6 to 8 hours. That means a musician, right?"
Yeah.
Said, yeah, but. But how do you make a living?
Yeah, I can imagine. Because, you know, here it's really tough to make a living as a musician only. That's why it's really impressive that you being an immigrant and not knowing the language, and in 8 years you've accomplished quite a bit, actually.
Yeah, I mean, this is story, I think, it goes with all the artists, basically, now around the world. Specifically, the immigrant artists.
Yeah,
and
especially
because they plant them in different world, right?
Yeah.
Different environment, and different language, and different culture, and different views. And now he has to adapt himself.
Yeah.
By instincts of survive. Now, I think survive is how to survive your art, not to survive by yourself.
Yeah.
To me, it's like surviving is just, there's instincts in the world. We will survive. But how can you survive your art? That's the most important thing.
That is very inspiring, Rahim. Thank you very much for sharing that.
My pleasure.
Is this going to be your first time in San Francisco, by the way?
Or? No, this is... I'm always Kim Sprung. I love San Francisco. I love it because they are progressive people, so I can talk about Bush and I can...
Here, relatively speaking, we have maybe many more people who are familiar with the Oud and would
Absolutely.
Like to learn it. So what kind of advice do you have for them to find resources on how to learn the Oud or how to study Arabic music, or where can they find resources for that?
Well, now actually we live in a small globe and we have this gigantic kind of weird thing called internet, right? I mean, it's really weird. I mean, you can find anything, any possible thing. And if you need to study theory, you can find it in the internet. If you need to hear music, you can find it in the internet. And I mean, everything basically is there. Now, if you are a serious musician and you need to study music with Arabic, I think you go to whatever is available. Actually, there is a journalist, he interviewed me. His name is Tom, I think, for newspaper. Bay Area Express or something?
It's a newspaper here in the San Francisco
yeah.
area?
At any rate, I find out he's Oud player. And he was asking me a very specific question about Makam and scales, and I said, wait a minute, do you know this kind of... He said, well, I play Oud.
Yeah.
I've been studying it for like 12 years.
That's great.
But I do not have instructor.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, he asked me if I can give him a lesson when I'm there. So I will do that. I mean, I'd love to help these people, and they have passion and compassion to this instrument.
Do you teach Oud or Arabic music in Albuquerque?
Yes. I'm a professor here at UNM.
Oh, excellent.
I now part-time, actually.
University of New Mexico?
Yes.
Oh, okay, great.
I teach Arabic music theory.
That's
and
great.
I have my own, actually, orchestra here. I have 45 musicians.
That's impressive.
We not play in Bach and Mozart, by the way. We play just classical
yeah.
music here. And that's one of the great things about it. So we have an orchestra where Western instruments and
mm-hmm.
Eastern instruments at the same time. We have Ouds, we have Kanun, we have Tabla, we have Ney, we have Santur, and we have Joza, and we have everything, basically. All Arabic Middle Eastern instruments, beside all the winds instrument and string instrument. I have 12, violin players. And
so if somebody wants to hear your orchestra, do they have to come to New Mexico? Or?
Absolutely. Actually, we do 3 free concerts a year, and they can come and enjoy this Arabic music. Middle Eastern music. We play all kinds. We have Dama'is, Longa'as, a classical tradition from all around the Middle East, from Turkey, from Iran, from Iraq, from Egypt, from Syria.
Are there any recordings of those concerts available on the internet?
Not really, because we didn't have time. I mean, that's really a great question. I have to do it.
I think...
Yeah, there is an internet available, some of my own composition with the orchestra.
On your website?
No, I think in YouTube, whatever they call it.
Oh, YouTube. Oh, okay. But I also want to remind people about your website, which is rahimalhaj.com, right?
Right.
And that's rahimalhaj.com.
Yes.
Thank you again for being our guest tonight, and we welcome you to San Francisco tomorrow. At the Herbst Theater, and I'd like to know your next projects or your future dreams. What do you want to accomplish next?
Actually, I have two project coming up. One project is a Sufi project, and this Sufi project I've been working on for a long time, and to have Oud with different percussion around the world. So there's Native American percussion, African percussion,
wow.
Eastern percussion, Indian, and Latin American. All of them together with Oud when the oud were whirling around this percussion. With very big name percussion around the world. And that's one project. And my second project that I'm working right now with oud and sitar, santur player with Emir Safar. And that's the second project. And actually, I'm not always a project coming up with me. And I'm doing a project and with a great percussionist, Glenn Velez. We're playing next month in San Francisco.
Oh, really?
What they call it, the Palace of the Arts?
Palace of Fine Arts.
Yeah. It will be, this is part of the Sufi Rumi.
Yeah, Rumi from...
Yeah, it will be me and Glenn Velez, David Dowling, cello, and the poet Peter, the Rumi translator. And then Zuleika dancing, Sufi dancing.
Sufi dancing. Mm-hmm.
And it will be December 12th.
On December 12th at the Palace of Fine Arts.
Yeah, the poet Coleman Bach. And it will be December 12th, yes.
Excellent. Again, thank you very much. And I'd like to remind our listeners that Rahim Al-Hajj, who is my guest on the phone right now from Albuquerque, New Mexico, is going to be playing tomorrow as part of the San Francisco Jazz Festival at the Herbst Theater in San Francisco. For more information, you can go to sfjazz.com. Thank you very much, Rahim, again. And
thank you very much. Pleasure talking to you, Hala.
And I'll close this segment with a piece from your album, When the Soul is Settled. Do you want to pick one for us?
Well, whatever you pick, that will be fine. It's all the great Iraqi, kind of tradition Iraqi music. And in fact, I want to mention Suhail Kasper, who will be with me, too.
That's right, yes. Suhail Kasper from Los Angeles is going to be playing percussion, right?
Right.
Yes, and Suhail is... He's also an excellent Arabic musician from Lebanon.
He's an excellent musician, yeah.
All right, so
thanks,
I'm going to pick track number 5, Taksim Makam Bayat Hosseini.
Yes.
We're going to listen to Rahim Al-Hajj from his album When the Soul is Settled, Music of Iraq. Thank you very much, Rahim.
Thanks. Thank you.